MechCast, Saturday, November 9th, 2019. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Glad to have you back here with me for another week of what's going on in Apple and Mac news. Hopefully you're having a nice week. Looking over the show notes this week, we don't have a ton of stuff to talk about. Not a lot happening right now. I think this time of year we were hoping by now we would have some announcements of some new iPads, maybe a new product for tracking your stuff, the Apple Tile, Apple Tags, Air Tags, whatever we're calling them, all those sorts of things. All this stuff hasn't happened yet, which is a little bit unusual because I thought it was going to happen. I guess it's only unusual in that regard. I think a lot of us thought we were seeing these products. There's still a little bit of time, but it's kind of feeling like Apple is running out of opportunities. So right now, we just have a few things to go over. There actually is some news, a rumor about an upcoming Apple product and maybe a partnership, which is not something we hear typically that Apple does. We'll also talk about Apple TV Plus. A lot of people questioning if it is taking off, if it's popular. There's some analytics that came out this week that we can get into and talk about a little bit. I'm going to talk about iPad Pro and how it's doing in the market. And then Apple has updated its privacy page on its website. So we'll talk about that, and that will kind of round out the news for this week. And then I don't have a lot of feedback or comments from a lot of you this week. I guess maybe many of us are just kind of feeling the lull with Apple stuff. But we are going to follow up on some of the Apple TV Plus stuff that we've been talking about recently, and then also talk about the operating systems. I had asked for your opinions on some thoughts that I had regarding how Apple's release cycle has been. So we'll get into that, and that'll kind of round out this episode of the MacCast. Still should be a good one, so stay tuned, and we are going to just jump right into things. A long-standing rumor we've been discussing many times here on the MacCast is Apple's AR project. AR, VR, it's been kind of back and forth. Well, this week, Digitimes claims that Apple is partnering with Valve to actually develop its AR webset. You might think that's a little bit unusual. I know I did, but the two companies have worked together recently. In the past, back in 2017, Apple worked with them to bring native VR headset support to Mac OS High Sierra. The solution leveraged the Mac's eGPU support and Valve's Stream VR software. So you may have remembered that. You can actually use a VR headset with your Mac since Mac OS High Sierra. And previously, Digitimes had actually reported back in May that Apple had temporarily stopped its AR-VR headset development, and they said that they were disbanding the team. Now, with this new news, they're saying that actually it looks like what was going on was Apple was shifting from their in-house development to this new collaboration with Valve. And if you're going to partner with anyone on VR, Valve is a pretty good choice, and actually not VR, AR this time around. So they're not working on a VR headset. They're working on an augmented reality headset. We've known for a while Tim Cook is pretty bullish on augmented reality. We have ARKit, and sort of the next logical step was going to be some sort of headset display. There's been a question on whether it would be actually a separate device or something that you might dock your iPhone into. It's looking like, from what they're saying, that this is going to be more of a headset. Ming-Chi Kuo also stated a while back that Apple was cooperating with third-party brands to launch its first AR-mounted product or headset-mounted product. So this could be, again, what that's pointing to. It is a little unusual for Apple to partner with an outside company, but again, there has been some precedent set for it in the past, so I guess it could be a possibility. The product is expected to be sold as a wearable, so it will be an accessory to the iPhone. Essentially, a wireless display with the iPhone handling the wireless data and processing functions, and then the glasses or headset handling the display functionality. So the two are going to reportedly work together. The headset is expected to have its own version of an operating system, rumored to be called ROS, or Reality Operating System. And the user interface is expected to be some kind of a combination of Siri, touch, and head gestures. I don't know what kind of head gestures you'd end up using, but maybe a little bit of head tracking, that sort of thing. I am kind of excited about this kind of product, or at least the idea of this kind of product. I think really a lot comes down to the software and the actual implementation, the use cases. And as we know, Apple is always usually very focused on that holistic user experience. They're not going to bring something to market unless they can demonstrate a need, why this would make our lives better, how this technology could help us. Of course, there's lots of applications we can think about, directions and navigating, all kinds of great applications with bringing up, say, user manuals or working you through how-tos on how to create something or repair something. Of course, gaming, there's a lot of applications that are a lot of fun, and we've seen some of that with ARKit. So it is an interesting thing to think about. And again, if Apple were to partner with anyone, I think Valve would be a great choice. So if this turns out to be true, I'll be excited to see what they have to deliver. As far as when we expect to see this product, it is expected to launch sometime next year. Ming-Chi Kuo had commented in the past that he believed it would happen sometime in the fourth quarter of 2020, which feels like the right time frame for me. So around this same time next year, we might be seeing Apple releasing a AR headset in partnership with Valve. Although it's only been out for just a week, Apple TV Plus is taking up a lot of the news cycle over the past week. And what a lot of people are wondering is, how is the TV service stacking up? How is it doing? How did the launch go? I'm not personally sure it matters that much at this point, and I think we need a lot more time before we really decide if it's a success or a failure. There's a lot of shows coming, and a lot of the shows that Apple did launch with, they're sort of building up steam. They didn't sort of hit the market, I think, with a massive splash, but I don't think that was the intent. I think Apple was planning all along that this would be a kind of a slow buildup. And it's not that uncommon for new shows, I think, to kind of need a few episodes to build up ahead of steam. You're already trying to kind of establish characters and story plot lines and those sorts of things, and that does take time. I would say any new show, you need 3 or 4 episodes, and I think that's one of the reasons why most of the episodes that aren't launching as bingeable came out on November 1st with 3 episodes up front, and then they're releasing a weekly episode. So a lot of shows this week got their 4th episode. But the new TV service is being weighed and measured, and a lot of folks are coming up with pretty average to modest ratings around how the service is doing. The latest data this week comes from Parrot Analytics. They looked at the first 24-hour period after the November 1st launch, and they concluded that C was the only Apple TV Plus show that broke the top 20 most demanded shows in 2019. Again, personally, this feels a little bit premature, but that is sort of what they threw out there. Variety reported that Apple TV Plus had drawn, quote, millions of viewers, and that those who watched one episode of the core 4 series went on to watch at least one more, if not 2. So it sounds like those people who did opt in to watch some new Apple TV Plus content stayed to watch more. And I definitely count myself among that group. I have watched several of the shows, and I am enjoying several of them. So, you know, overall, I think that's great. Average viewing time was apparently high and exceeded Apple's internal expectations, so that is good, and I think that's what matters most. If Apple is happy with the success of Apple TV+, I think they are the ones that, you know, spent the money to get that out there. And even though some of the shows are getting kind of mixed reviews, I think overall the public seems to be enjoying them. So early on, the professional reviewers kind of chided Apple a little bit. They didn't come out with glowing reviews of a lot of the new shows. But I think when you look at what people are saying in general, talking around the water cooler, or as I ask friends of mine who are watching stuff, they're saying, yeah, they are enjoying it, and that the shows are getting better as they get more episodes in and they're getting more engaged and do plan on continuing to watch. And I, again, I think my experience has mirrored that very much. And we're going to talk and hear from some listeners, some MacCast listeners, a little later in the show about their experiences. So we'll get into this a little bit more. You know, Apple TV Plus does have a limited amount of content, but it continues to grow, and Apple has committed and said they're going to be adding at least one, if not more, new programs every month. And I think only time will tell. You know, we've got to give it a little bit of time. Netflix wasn't an instant hit overnight. I don't think that Amazon was either, so let's let them ramp up before we sort of knock them down. But as you know, a lot of people like to be highly critical of Apple always right out of the gate, and it's not surprising we're seeing the same kind of thing happening with Apple TV+. Another thing that was kind of thrown around was the amount of money that certain shows were costing Apple. One of those shows was C, and this week C's executive producer and director Francis Lawrence said in a Business Insider interview that reports of the show costing $240 million for two seasons was a little bit overblown. He says, quote, "It's an expensive show," and then goes on to say that people have thrown around that it's the most expensive show, but he says, "I can guarantee you it's not." So denying sort of those rumors that it's costing this exorbitant amount of money, like $15 million an episode. Some folks were saying it costs as much as a Game of Thrones in its last season. So, you know, I think it's probably going to vary from episode to episode, depending upon what's going on. Some are probably more expensive, some are less. They are doing some very interesting things with C. One of the things that they did was they worked to incorporate a number of blind and low vision actors into the show. He did comment that they didn't use as many as they had wanted, and that they are planning to add more blind and low vision actors in future seasons. So I thought that was pretty cool, considering the premise of the show is about a culture, a society that is completely blind. So there was early reports that they had done a lot of research, that they had done a lot of consulting with blind and low vision folks to make sure that they kind of got certain things right as they produce the show. And I found C to be very interesting. I'm getting into it and quite enjoying the content. And so I'm looking forward to see where Apple TV Plus goes. I think it's only going to gain in popularity, and I think it's going to do quite well. Is it going to hold up against, say, a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu? I don't think so, but I don't think that was ever Apple's intent for the service. They said right up front they were focusing on quality instead of quantity. I think it is going to grow. I think it's not going to be a small player, but it's probably going to be more in that mid-range, and I think Apple is really okay with that. It's something that they can build on, and I think if you look at a service like, or even a technology like iTunes, which has grown into Apple Music, or if you look at the growth curve of Apple Music itself, I think we're going to see a similar type of trajectory for Apple TV Plus and some of Apple's other service offerings. I think things like News Plus kind of had a slow rollout, but it's starting to gain some success, and it's starting to get some accolades from the publishers who are on it, publishers are starting to buy more into this idea. And I think it's going to take a little while for Apple TV Plus to also build up as a service, like anything new on the market. Unfortunately, I think for Apple, the problem is where all this analysis is coming from is they're being thrown into a fray where there is just a new subscription service around the corner from just about everyone. And they've got Disney Plus, coming up. You've got NBC launching their offering, all those sorts of things. And so it's natural that they're going to get compared to everything else. But I think what a lot of people outside of Apple don't realize is that Apple is unique, and often they're not looking to be the largest. They're looking more to be the best. And I would say overall, regardless of the reviews of the individual shows, every show that I've watched or looked at on Apple TV Plus, I don't think you could deny or say isn't a quality show. It may not be your cup of tea. It may not be the kind of show you're looking for, but it is well-produced, well-written, well-acted, has amazing casts and those sorts of things. And I think that's saying something, right? Because there's a lot of shows out there, a lot of things out there that are just sort of thrown out there, have one or two seasons, and just go away. And I don't think that's what Apple is looking for in terms of their content. So I think it's really too early, to kind of have this kind of analysis, but everybody wants to have that first reaction. And I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing right now. There were some new numbers this week from Strategy Analytics about iPads and global market share, and they show that the iPad's share grew about 4% in the third quarter of this year, which is pretty incredible considering that they also say the overall tablet market fell 4%. So Apple doing quite well. Apple did release the new 10.2-inch entry-level iPad, which likely helped with those numbers. They also, though, are selling iPad Pros very well. In fact, if you remember, in Apple's last quarterly results, iPad revenue grew by 8%, and that shows that possibly those iPad Pros are having a positive impact on Apple's bottom line as well. And I find that surprising, given the fact that we have not seen that Apple refresh of the iPad Pro lineup this year. And like I said earlier, time does seem to be running out on whether or not we will get an announcement. There could be something still coming quietly, maybe next week. We've been hearing rumors about a refresh of the iPad Pro line, but I think it'll be this week or next week. And if not, then we're probably waiting till next year to see some new iPads. So the current lineup, again, is strong. I don't know that Apple necessarily needs to refresh it, but they typically do this time of year. And it's just a little bit surprising that they haven't. But obviously, it's not affecting their numbers. And tablet share for Apple seems to grow and continue to grow quite nicely. Another thing that Apple is doing quite nicely with is Apple Watch. It actually continues to dominate its segment. Again, from Strategy Analytics, Apple Watch sold 6.8 million units last quarter, according to their analysis, which was an increase of 51% year over year. So phenomenal growth for Apple Watch. And again, if you look at the last quarter numbers in that segment, that backs it up as well. They also believe that Apple's smartwatch market share has increased from 45% last year to 47.9% this year. So Apple continuing to dominate the smartwatch segment, and just in sort of on the street evidence, I can tell you, I see more Apple Watches every single day. They're out and about, and tons of people seem to have them. I think it's a very popular product. Probably I see that almost as much as I see Apple's other kind of dominating product, which is AirPods. I think everybody has a set of AirPods, or at least it feels that way here in California. Maybe I have a limited world view, but I've talked to a few other people in other parts of the world, and it does seem that like AirPods are kind of becoming almost a little bit of a fashion statement, if not a status symbol. So overall, though, iPad doing very well for Apple. Apple Watch also doing quite well. And then finally, in the news for this week, we know Apple is very focused on privacy. They actually have a pretty neat new iPhone ad out now that talks about privacy in the iPhone. And to go along with that, it looks like they've updated the privacy page on their website. So they did a refresh to apple.com/privacy. The new design is cleaner and much simpler to understand. They kind of lay out key features, things like Safari, Maps, iCloud, Apple Pay, all those sorts of things, break it down and let you know at a real high level how they are protecting your privacy. And then to go a little bit deeper, the page also now contains 4 detailed white papers covering location services, photos, Safari web browsing, and sign in with Apple. So it's a pretty nice refresh. If you haven't caught it, head over to apple.com/privacy and check it out. Just to give you some highlights, some things that I noted as I was looking through the site, they say Safari has built-in fingerprinting defense, and what it does is that it shares a simplified system profile with the websites that you visit. So one of the tactics that tracking sites or websites are doing to kind of track you online, in addition to doing things like cookies like they always have, is to uniquely identify you in the different places you might go. They try to fingerprint your computer and your browser. So it'll look at how much RAM you have installed, what your graphics display resolution is. It will combine a bunch of different data points, and if it gets enough of them, they can kind of uniquely fingerprint your machine and track you through the web. What Safari is now doing is it's pushing back a simplified system profile so they don't have all those data points to continue to track you. So that's a pretty cool little technology and something that's built into Safari and something that's highlighted on that new privacy page. Another cool one is in Photos, the Apple Neural Engine and the A13 chip. It does over 1 billion operations per photo to recognize faces and places. So if you've ever used the Photos app, you know that you can get a cool summary of all the photos you've taken at a certain place or all the photos that have certain people in them. All of that is happening on device using the power of Apple's A series processor and that neural engine. So it's not having to go out to the web, not having to go online. That stays secure, local, and private on your device. Smart suggestions and messages, another thing. That's where it will pull up photos to send based on who you're messaging. So you might be sending a message to someone and it can tell you, hey, do you want to share this photo of that person? Same sort of thing. All of that processing done directly on your device, not in the cloud, information not being sent to Apple. And then finally, your Apple ID is not directly connected to, say, your Siri, unlike maybe something like Amazon Echo, which connects your account to your voice. Apple does not do that. Your requests are associated with a random identifier, and that random identifier changes. So they can't track you through those voice recordings. And they also point out that they limit the recordings that actually do get sent up and processed. They try to do as much as possible locally on the device, and only the bits and pieces that are necessary are sent for additional processing. So some pretty cool stuff. If you want to find out more, check out apple.com/privacy. And with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Masterclass. Masterclass offers classes that let you learn from the best. They offer exclusive online classes taught by masters of their craft. One of my favorite things about Masterclass is the amazing depth and variety of their courses taught by masters in their field. There's no place else you're going to have access to this kind of talent. And another thing that I really enjoy about Masterclass is the quality and presentation of their courses. It's honestly some of the best I've ever seen. And what I love is that each course is unique in its style, which to me keeps them very interesting. Plus, they're presented in small chunks, typically 10 to 15 minutes, so I can easily fit them into my schedule. And it's made even easier by the fact that you can access them on any device, your iPhone, your iPad, your Mac, or best of all, at least for me, the Apple TV. And what I'm finding as I take more Masterclass courses is that I just want more because I'm learning things that I can apply in all kinds of areas of what I do. An example, I took Neil Gaiman's course on writing, and I'm not even a writer, but what I learned a lot from that course was all of the things that go into storytelling. And as a podcaster, that's a lot of what I do is storytelling. So it's helping make my podcasting that much better. And I've found that over and over again with the depth and variety of the courses. Will Wright's game design course. He's the game designer of The Sims. He did a thing on early prototyping, and that had direct applications for me in what I do with programming. I'm not doing games, but I could take those ideas and concepts and reapply them. And that's one of the great things about masterclasses. They just have this depth, and you can go into so many areas, and you're learning from masters in their field about creative thinking, analytical thinking, business skills, all that sort of stuff. So you can get courses individually, but I think having the all-access pass is even better because you can really deep dive like that. They have over 60 courses, and they are constantly adding more. It's a great investment in learning, and now you can have unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a MacCast listener, you'll get $30 off. I highly recommend you check it out. Get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as a MacCast listener, you'll get 15% off the annual all-access pass. Go to masterclass.com/MacCast. That's masterclass.com/MacCast for 15% off Masterclass. And a big thank you to Masterclass for their support of the podcast. Something I asked you about on the last episode of the MacCast was to tell me your experience in signing up for the Apple TV Plus free year. There seems to have been a little bit of confusion, or probably more accurately, there seems to be something wrong with the setup process for a number of folks. What's going on and what we're getting reports of are that some people who should qualify for the free year are not being offered it, and conversely, some folks who feel like they don't qualify for the free year are being offered it. We actually had an example of a MacCast listener who had qualified for the, who had not rather qualified for the free offer, but was offered it and thought it might be too good to be true. And as it turned out, it was, because when that listener went to follow up on their free year, which they had signed up for, they contacted Apple Service. They looked again and said, nope, you're on the 7-day free trial and you are going to be charged the $4.99. Now, that, while frustrating, was accurate, but the question remains, why was that free year offered? And more importantly, why are some people who qualify not seeing the free offer? One of those reasons could actually be the account that you have associated with the TV app. You might want to double check and make sure that if you have an account for iTunes and Apple Music that is maybe different than your iCloud account, you might try logging in with one or the other and see if that makes a difference. I have had reports of some people telling me that they had to kind of switch accounts to make sure that the offer did show up. And that would be basically whichever account is associated in to the TV app. So that is one thing to check out. A few other things to try if you're thinking that you qualify for the offer and you're not seeing it, try force quitting the TV app and relaunching it. Sign out of your Apple ID and then just sign back in and then reopen the TV app. You could also try signing in at tv.apple.com, and there you can sign up online. It might show you the free year offer there, even if your device is not showing that to you. And if none of those things work, probably your last resort is to contact Apple support. If you are going to contact them, make sure you have valid proof of the purchase that qualifies you. They should be able to see that, and they can give you a special promo code if they can verify that, so you can redeem it for your one free year of Apple TV Plus. And if you do need to contact support, just a side tip I'll give you, try using the support app, the Apple support app on your iOS device. Through it, you can actually request a call and you can even schedule it, and Apple will call you back. So you don't have to wait on hold. You don't have to call in for anybody more than once. And I use it quite frequently and it works great. It can be a little bit tricky to get to because they try to kind of push you through the support wizard. But if you just look for the option that says, hey, I don't see my question answered here, I need more help, click on that, and that will usually get you to the area where you can request a phone call for support. And I have always had great experiences using this service, and hopefully you will as well. But I know it has been frustrating for a few folks who are not getting that free offer, and maybe some of these things can help. Another thing that we talked about on the last episode of the MacCast was I gave you some of my early impressions of some of the Apple TV Plus shows, and I asked for some of your feedback on what you thought about the content, and I did get a couple of voicemails this week. So we're going to hear from David and Mike. Let's start off with David.
Hi, Adam. It's David in Connecticut. You asked for some feedback about the new Apple TV programming. So I watched all of the three available episodes of The Morning Show, and I really enjoyed them a lot. I thought that was really well done with some really great acting as well. And then I started watching C, which I know that you said that you've watched the first two episodes. I got a little bit bored, and so I almost didn't finish watching episode two, but I decided, you know, maybe I should go back. So I did. I went back, and I guess it was better this time. I just started rewatching the entire episode two, having already watched episode one. And then I watched episode three, which really brought a lot of things together. Obviously, it's going to go on from there. So I will probably continue watching C. Now, I have a different take than you did on the violence, but I must premise this by saying I don't have kids. So violence is fine with me. I don't care how violent something is, I guess within some limits at least. But anything like that does not bother me. Having said that, I think it might be a good idea for Apple to consider putting on at least the kind of warning screen that HBO uses, saying what kind of violence is, whether there's going to be profanity, whether there's going to be sexual situations and things like that. At least that would serve as a guide for whether people with sensibilities may or may not want to watch it, or certainly people with children, not expose them to certain things if they so choose. So I'm really happy with the programming so far. I did start watching, what's that other one that I think you said you watched? It wasn't the Snoopy thing or anything. There was another one there. But, oh, it's the space, the thing about outer space. And so, that looks pretty good so far. And it's sort of a different take. I don't want to give away any spoilers. It's a different take on what happened with the landing on the moon situation. And I'm really interested to see where that is going to end up. So thanks again, as always, for the excellent podcast. And I hope this feedback at least helps a little bit.
Hey, David. Yeah, I think it does help quite a bit. I think a lot of people are wondering about the content and about, you know, various people's opinions. And I think those of us in the community are probably better suited for a lot of other folks in the community to review these things than, say, just some stodgy reviewer at some magazine or some blog or something like that. I mean, we are kind of a little bit closer to it. And so I think our opinions matter a little bit more, right? Real people, the people who are actually going to be consuming it and interested in consuming it and not just doing it because it's their job, right? Not just watching this stuff and trying to be hypercritical of it. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Some of these shows, I think, are taking a little bit of time to build up. And while that puts some people off, I think if you stick with them a little bit longer, you'll find that they are pretty engaging and pretty interesting. I'll tell you, on the For All Mankind, what I'm really enjoying about that is, and I'll try to do this without, again, spoiling too much. I think, the premise is pretty well known. The idea is sort of alternate history where the premise is an alternate history where we lose the race to the moon in the late 1960s. So that's kind of the setup. That's part of the trailer. I don't think we're giving away too much there. But what I'm enjoying about it is that it's the history part of it. It weaves in that one plot point as a alternate history, but all of the history and a lot of the events and people around that remain unchanged. And how does that affect the timeline, and how does that affect the storyline and the plot? And I'm finding that really engaging and interesting. So I thought that was pretty cool. The other thing that you mentioned in your message that I think is really on point is at the beginning of the show, showing some sort of information about what content is going to be in the show so that parents or people who are watching it can prepare themselves for the kinds of content that they're going to be exposed to. And I think you mentioned HBO there. They kind of have a great interstitial page that says, hey, this is going to contain violence or graphic violence, language, sexual content, all of those sorts of things. And I don't know if you missed it, but because it actually could be pretty easy to miss, and I think this is part of the point that you're making, is that maybe it needs to be a little bit more deliberate. But I have noticed that every time you start an Apple TV Plus show, there is a little, almost like a popover. It's pretty small, but there is a popover that will list out what content is going to be in that episode. And what I thought was kind of unique about that was it wasn't just a generic thing. It would specifically apply to that episode. So if that episode had graphic violence or sexual content or language in it, those would be displayed. If it only had violence or language, it would only show one of those things or two of those things. And it does come up as kind of an overlay when you first start playing the program. So it is there. It's very subtle, and that may be part of the problem. Maybe it needs to be more obvious up front so that someone doesn't miss it. And I totally agree with you on that. It is very helpful to have those. So thank you for your feedback. We also did get some feedback this week from Mike about Apple TV Plus, and here's what Mike had to say.
Hi, Adam. This is Mike from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Enjoy listening to your podcast each week. Keep up the great work. Just wanted to give a response. I listened to your latest podcast, and you talked about the Apple TV Plus service. I, too, had the free year and had no problems loading it onto my Roku, obviously through my Apple devices, but had an issue through my Amazon Fire Stick. So I just wanted to give your listeners a heads up if they are experiencing the same issue. When I tried to load it onto my Amazon Fire Stick, I could not sign in. The part where you could sign in through a mobile device wouldn't work. I kept getting an error message. And then I was also getting just a loop on the sign-in page if I tried to log in through my TV. So I was on with Amazon on Twitter. They sent me over to their website to talk to tech support. They ended up having to escalate it. And finally, on November 2nd, they put out an update that fixed the issue. So for any of your listeners that are having issues through their Amazon Fire Stick devices, go into your settings and do an update. There is an update there that fixes the issue, and you should have no problems going forward. I'm enjoying the service so far. I watched the first two episodes of For All Mankind, and I've enjoyed it. And I can't wait to just try out some of the other shows, too, over this year and just see if it's worth, if it's a service worth keeping in the future. So again, keep up the great work, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Hey, Mike, thank you for your thoughts and opinions on Apple TV Plus, and thanks for the tip for the Fire TV stuff. Yeah, it's kind of amazing that Apple TV Plus and Apple TV is coming to so many different devices that are non-Apple devices, right? I had forgotten even that Fire Stick was an option, and I think part of Apple's hesitance in the past to kind of open things up is that experience, right? The fact that you kind of didn't have that Apple-like experience that you might have had, say, with an Apple TV. And it's not a knock on the Fire Stick necessarily, but it does show that Apple loses a little bit of control over the experience when a third party is involved, right? They have to rely on Amazon to support that, and it looks like Amazon dropped the ball a little bit. Luckily, they were out quickly with a patch, and it sounds like it is working now. So how you maintain that sort of quality control when you're dealing with outside third parties, I think, does become a concern. So something that we talked about earlier in the podcast is the AR headset and the fact that there's this rumor that Apple might be partnering with Valve. One thing that I have in the back of my mind about that piece that I didn't mention earlier, was that, you know, Apple doesn't like to often give up control like that. And so anytime I hear that in a rumor, I question that rumor just a little bit, right? I think Apple still could do the AR headset in-house. Maybe they're partnering with some software stuff or some content stuff with Valve, and that's more what that partnership is about. But same kind of thing here with the Apple TV Plus service and some of the other third parties that are supporting it. But thank you for that feedback. I really do appreciate it. Just adding on to one other thing related to shows, I know when I gave my reviews, I think I talked about the fact that I was watching C, I was watching For All Mankind, and those were kind of the two shows that I focused on up front. I also wanted to mention that I recently started watching Dickinson, and I am really liking and enjoying that show. So far, I would say my favorite Apple TV Plus show is For All Mankind. Now it's probably followed number two by Dickinson, and then C is my third favorite. I will tell you that Dickinson is kind of has this older teenage comedy vibe. It's about the poet Emily Dickinson, but they kind of put this modern twist on it. So even to the point where I think this did put off some of the reviewers, it's meant to be kind of a period piece, but it's still a comedy, and they still kind of intermix modern language and modern speech patterns with the traditional sort of historical stuff in the same episode. And I kind of like it. It's quirky. I'm enjoying it. And I think the performances are great in it, and it's just a lot of fun. But I do think that kind of put off some of the reviewers, and maybe that's why it didn't get such great reviews. But a lot of these shows have already been renewed for a second season. I think Dickinson, C, and For All Mankind, and possibly also The Morning Show. I haven't gotten into The Morning Show yet, but I've heard from many, many folks who I trust who are in our community that they're really enjoying that as well. So again, here you've got, we talked a little bit earlier about a lot of the critics being, no pun intended, but critical of Apple TV Plus, and yet a lot of the shows right out of the gate are very good quality, entertaining and engaging shows. You've got four shows that are solid. Are any of them runaway hits right out of the gate? I think it's too early to tell again, but it's amazing that you have four really good shows when you only have a slate of, you know, eight different things that you're launching with. And so I think that focus on quality is really shining through when it comes to Apple TV Plus. I'd love to continue to get more of your thoughts and opinions on it. Actually, here's another question I have for you. Do you think now, given what you've seen, that the $4.99 a month price, if you weren't getting the free year, would you be willing to pay $4.99? And again, it might be a little bit too soon because we don't know of all of the content that will be on the service in a year. But you know, do you think the value is there? Is that enough for the few shows that are there? I'd be curious to get your opinions on that. Shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. All right, the other thing that we were talking about last week, I kind of weighed in and gave some of my opinions about the latest OS releases, Mac OS Catalina and iOS 13. And let's be frank and honest, they've been a little bit bumpy. A number of folks, myself included, ran into little issues, little quirks. We've seen this in the past. This isn't anything new, but it does feel like this year there's been a little bit more, almost like stuff was pushed out before it was really ready, or maybe there were just too many features that they tried to cram in there. And I was arguing that it might be time for sort of another year where we focus on just making improvements to the operating system, or better yet, I thought, and my opinion may have changed a little bit, as you'll hear in a second, I thought, you know, maybe Apple needs to lay off of the yearly release cycle and not be so hard-nosed about launching a new Mac operating system and a new version of iOS every year in the fall. Maybe they want to spend a little bit more time or give their developers a little bit more time to develop that. And I asked for your thoughts and opinions on that, and I received some feedback from Brian, and here's what Brian had to say.
Hey, Adam, this is Brian responding to your call for comments on issues people are having with iOS 13.2, specifically the comments that Marco Arment made on Twitter, along with some of his users that use Overcast. I happen to be an Overcast user. It's a great app. However, I'm not having any of the issues that those users are reporting, and the reason being is I am still running iOS 12, and I'm going to continue running iOS 12, Adam, until I can get some assurance that the next release of iOS 13, presumably 13.2.1, or maybe they'll go to 13.3, who knows. But I'm going to stay on iOS 12 for both my iPhone 7 and my iPad mini until iOS 13 gets all these bugs worked out. I have delayed purchasing an iPhone 11 or trading in my 7 and trading in my iPad, because when you buy a new device, I don't think you can downgrade to iOS 12, so I've had to put off those hardware purchases because I'm simply not willing to deal with these bugs. As for the yearly software releases, you were spot on, Adam. You are absolutely correct. There is no reason Apple needs to put itself and its users through this every single year. They established a great template and a great precedent for iOS 12, and for whatever reason, they elected not to do that this year. Craig Federighi, if you are listening, please know that I do not care about 60 new emojis. I do care about having iOS run smoothly on my devices. That is where your priority should be for you and your team. So my message to you, Craig, is get this stuff fixed. And get it fixed soon. Otherwise, I will not be putting more money in your pocket and that of your shareholders with new device purchases until you do. Adam, thank you so much, as always, for all that you do, and look forward to hearing what other people think.
Hey, Brian, thank you for sharing that. And I would say you are definitely not alone in holding off on doing the upgrades. You know, historically in the past, I had held off on doing Mac operating system upgrades. This year, for whatever reason, I decided to just jump into the fray. And luckily for me, I did not run into any too many issues. Not even any really big issues with my move to macOS Mojave. Now, I know that from reports and from hearing from other folks that I maybe lucked out a little bit there. So, you know, again, I think this is something that we deal with each year's release, some years worse than others. This year particularly seemed a little bit rocky, especially for iOS 13. But, you know, you followed up with me actually right before the show and noted that Apple did release iOS 13.2.2. It is out now, and it does address and fix the RAM management issue, which was one of the bigger issues that was brought up with the earlier releases of iOS 13. So Apple has rapidly pushed out updates, but I think that only serves to sort of illustrate the issue, right? They kind of had to rapidly patch some things. Why weren't these things addressed or patched ahead of time? And there can be lots of reasons for that. So that's somewhat of a rhetorical question, right? Because Apple does as much testing as they possibly can, but you never know what's going to happen when you get out on millions of devices in the wild. There's going to be things that get caught that maybe didn't get caught in QA. So I don't want to throw that all back on Apple, but it does feel like this is a year where we had a few more bugs than we're typically used to. Now, the other thing I want to address, because you mentioned it in your piece, and it was something that I brought up, was, you know, not adhering to this yearly release cycle as a possible fix for this issue. Well, my friend Patrice, who is also a software developer, this week emailed me and brought up a great point and said, you know, the release cycle is not necessarily the issue. It's more about the complexity, trying to cram too many features into a release that then has to hit this arbitrary release date, right? You have this ticking deadline, and you've got all of these features that you're trying to cram in there. And the problem is that you're likely going to miss something, or you're going to have features that maybe overwrite each other or sort of run into each other and potentially cause conflicts. There's a lot of things that can go wrong as you increase complexity on a project. And Patrice points out that longer release cycles don't necessarily help this because they don't inherently reduce that complexity, right? You have more time, but chances are with more time, you're going to try and cram in more features. And then you also have the problem that a longer release cycle could potentially hold up features or bug fixes or things that are ready to go earlier in the cycle, right? So you have a feature, maybe it's done in the first 6 months. If you're on a 2-year release cycle, or you're not going to release for another 18 months, that feature is held up for 18 months and things can change, right? Some of those other features may come in and impact that feature that had been ready to go many, many months earlier. So it adds this complexity. So Patrice points out you have to make the release cycles actually smaller, which seems a little bit counterintuitive, but the idea here is you decrease the number of changes per release or per iteration of the software, and that ultimately decreases the complexity, shortens the feedback cycles that you have to do, and allows for features to be released when they're ready instead of rushing them out on an arbitrary date, trying to hit this sort of arbitrary deadline. And I started thinking about that a little bit, and that absolutely makes a ton of sense, right? If you can limit and only work on one feature at a time and then roll that out, that feature is going to be able to be QA'd and tested and looked at. And if it has an impact on some other feature, you can deal with that one variable, right? It's about trying to sort of reduce the number of variables. The more variables you put into the equation, the harder it is going to be to control that. And if you can do these smaller subsets, that can actually go a long way to reducing the number of bugs and errors and things that you might introduce. And as I thought about that, I realized this is actually one of the advantages, as much as this is controversial. You know, some people don't like subscription software, and especially subscription software from bigger companies like Adobe or Microsoft. But Adobe is actually a great example with their Creative Cloud of being able to not have to hit this big yearly marketing release, right? We don't have a big giant new release of Photoshop every year or every 2 years or something like that, where they're trying to cram in a ton of features. Now that they're on the subscription cycle, they roll out features as they're ready. So they will sort of announce things, say, we're working on this feature, that feature, and then roll them out slowly through different releases throughout the year. And this could be actually a great way for Apple to try and minimize this. So I think they could still have the marketing event. They could still come in at a Worldwide Developer Conference and sort of show the feature roadmap. Hey, over the next year or 2 years, these are the features we're hoping to roll into the operating system, and not really give a specific timeline on when those features will hit, but just that they will come out throughout the year. So rather than hitting one yearly release where we dump a ton of new features on the users, what if those features were rolled out throughout the year as they became ready for release? Then you don't have these deadlines. You can have teams working on the features that they need to work on, and once something gets completed, it can be rolled out at that point. And that sounds like a very nice thing to me. You know, rolling them out through the year, throughout the year, when they're ready, no big marketing push that they have to hit. Now, marketing might have a problem with that, but I think you can work around that on the marketing side. You can find creative ways to sort of highlight the features coming out throughout the year rather than all at once. So it's an interesting thing to think about. Patrice got me thinking about it. I wanted to share it with you to get you thinking about it, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. So what do you think about this concept? Shoot me some feedback, send me an email, shoot me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a moment and thank our show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for Mac and iOS. You can find more information and details on their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the podcast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you'll find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.